No.
We'll call the Community Development Committee meeting to order. It's 5:15. Rick Fagerly is here.
Sean Meskey.
Julie Osmus.
Sarah Swedberg.
Vicki Davis.
Dave Ramstead.
All right, thank you all for being here. Item number two, public comment. There is no one here to speak to us. Item three, discussion regarding Opportunity Zone incentive options. David?
Thank you, Committee Chair Fagerly. The incentive ideas that are before you are just for informational purposes to see which ones are tolerable. We were brainstorming, so these are all just ideas. Then we'll develop the ordinances after this meeting and bring those back to committee for approval to bring some or all to council. The intent of the proposed city incentives for the Opportunity Zone is to preserve the zone as a city program if the IRS's capital gains incentives were ever to expire. But the ultimate goal is to make the Opportunity Zone irresistible to local, state, and national national developers. The incentive ideas were drawn from multiple cities by Sarah Swedberg and myself, but our proposal is to combine them all into one very potent cocktail of incentives. This package of incentives is therefore conceived as a pilot program in just for this one area of the city of Wilmer, which would be the Opportunity Zone, and just for 5-year renewable periods. So every 5 years, we would come back to the council to either seek a modified plan or renew or as is, or to dissolve the program. And with that, I will pass the initial package of fee incentives to Sarah to talk about. Would you like to do that?
Yes. Okay. So, like we said, we just piled a bunch of stuff together and we'll kind of just go through it. So, the first part on your proposal there are fee incentives. So we went through a number of fees that the city currently charges for developments or other such monetary items that we could look at as incentives for developments within this Opportunity Zone. Again, like Dave said, really the intention of doing these incentives is to pile on top of the Opportunity Zone. And what a lot of these incentives do is make it tangible for current property owners who want to invest in their buildings or other local developers who are interested in investing in this area to make it attainable, because sometimes those capital gains taxes are, or those capital gains incentives are not something that your local mom and pop would have any sort of benefit from being a part of that program or putting those funds into a special fund to invest in an Opportunity Zone, though they can. There's a lot of barriers because of the legal and tax kind of jargon that goes along with putting your money into such a specialized fund, that you have to have a pretty significant investment in order to make that cash flow for yourself. So things that we have talked about or things that we have on the table are SAC and WAC fees, so sewer access and water access charges. Currently we have it noted on there. We charge $100 per plumbing fixture unit, and the purpose behind that is, you know, we had significant investment with our wastewater treatment plant and other utilities that we provide as a city, and so those help cover those costs. It depends on the development. If you have a 72-unit apartment complex, they're going to have a lot more plumbing fixtures than an office with 3 bathrooms, right? So that can vary widely. Sean provided me with some examples. If you are curious about examples of some current projects.
A good round figure would be like a 50-unit apartment building might have 3 plumbing fixtures in each unit, a couple bathrooms and a kitchen. That's $15,000. So it's not huge, but it is a chunk of change that really incentivizes the project, mm-hmm. just on that one incentive.
Absolutely. Building permit fees, obviously, again, dependent upon what the use looks like, but that is something that comes out of our department, that would be all of the fees that are covered by inspections and plan review from Tom and or Jason.
And that's thousands of dollars per project.
Yep. Absolutely. So
is that legal not to charge that?
We would still have to charge the state fee, which is like a 1% or something like that, 0.5%. Mm-hmm. We'd have to collect that for the state.
Yep. Absolutely.
But we could forgo ours.
Yep. And again, remember, this is just within that opportunity zone, which encompasses...
That was my question.
Yep.
Yeah.
It encompasses downtown, which would be this kind of area here. And a lot of this is like single-family residential, east and west there with this Highway 12 strip in there.
The poorest part of Wilmer.
Yep. So the opportunity zones were all designated off of census tracts that had lowest household incomes.
Okay.
In the state. So any of these incentives that we're talking about, whether we would consider waiving them fully or partially, that would only pertain if a project happened within this area. It would not be anywhere else.
And only for 5 years.
Yep.
Okay, so if Quick Trip decides to build,
yep,
in that area, that's going to be in the opportunity zone.
Yep.
Are they going to be able to access all of this?
Absolutely.
Then?
If it's okay. If it's passed in time. Yep.
Okay.
But is that a project that would have happened anyway?
There's going to be, we'll get into it in a little bit, but what we're hoping to do as well is encourage ideal developments, right? So we're going to have our scenario of we want to see mixed use, or we want to see, mixed ownership and rental for housing, or mixed income opportunities in a housing project kind of thing. And so if you check all of our boxes, then here are the different incentives that we can, that we have agreed to provide.
Right. If you're
matching with this development that we'd like to see.
Right. Once we develop the ordinance, there will be some caveats that they will have to tick off in order to trigger some of these incentives that they're available for. Conceivably, they could trigger all of them and get all of the incentives. Mm-hmm. I also want to go back to your comment. No matter when we start this, there's probably going to be a project or something that's just about to come into the opportunity zone. So we're not going to be able to exclude, somebody who just happens to come in when we just start these incentives. But it's inevitable that no matter when we start it, there will be some project that was just about probably to come in, and they're going to get to take advantage of that. So.
And then somebody, and just like with anything, then you have Jake's Pizza.
Right.
They just put in whatever, how many thousands of dollars.
They just missed it.
Yeah.
Right. It's just, you've got to start something at some point, and some are going to get it, some are going to miss it. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Okay, so sag and whack building permits, land use application fees, that would be anything that goes through me, again, and same with sign permits. So the land application fees would be for like a conditional use permit or something that goes through planning commission. We have a range of, depending on what they're doing, it'd be between $150 and $400. Not a ton, but something we can throw out there. And same with signage, $40 to $70 per sign. Downtown in this area, you see one, maybe two signs. So again, not a whole lot, but something we can throw out on the table.
Yeah.
Who would be an example of that has a sign, that they are paying for a sign?
So the signage is just when the sign goes up. Either a wall sign or a freestanding sign. So 4th Avenue Homes just put their sign out in front of the Goodness. They paid $40 to do that. And that gives us a guarantee, or that gives us that checkpoint that they're within the ordinance guidelines and all of that kind of stuff.
Right. They submit an application.
Yep.
They submit an image of their sign. We approve it. And they pay a fee.
Yep. Exactly. And that's based off of size of the sign. So the bigger the sign, the higher dollar amount you pay. Tax abatements. This piece kind of gets to some examples that Moorhead actually has out right now. So they have this zone called the Renaissance Zone, and they have created kind of a standing tax abatement within their downtown area. One thing that we talk about a lot is we've got historic buildings that take some investment to keep up to date. City auditorium, this building, we're well familiar with that. And so what Moorhead has done is they've kind of created this chart. So you could be exempt, 100% exempt for 5 years if you invest $30 per square foot in your building. Exempt from additional taxes. So your taxes are where they're at right now. But sometimes a property owner might sit on their building and not actually invest in it because they don't want to deal with the taxes significantly increasing because they're increasing the value of their building by keeping it up to date and maybe replacing the roof or updating your bathrooms or whatever it might be. You know, sometimes you might not have a rental tenant or whatever it might be. This gives them a little bit of a break to say, hey, if you invest in your building, like, we want to see, you will get this that tax abatement. Your taxes as they are will stay, but anything additional created will be abated for, in this case, 5 years when you invest $30 per square foot.
And unlike TIF, everybody could get this.
Yep.
That meets these criteria, whatever we establish them as, whether we follow Moorhead
or not.
And
then at 5 years, they would hit a little more.
Yep, they would. And one thing, I've talked to a couple property owners downtown about this, you know, within their 15-year exempt percentage, they kind of do steps, right? So for the first 5 years, you get 100% tax abatement. The next 6 to 10 years, you get 75%. And the last 11 to 15 years, you get 50%. And that kind of helps build that back up so you're not just hit all at once with this huge $130 per square foot investment that you made into your building. That's most likely going to significantly increase your taxes, and your value that tax percentage is based off of. That kind of helps build that back into your taxes.
Great program, and I'll give you a little background on it. Moorhead adopted this Renaissance Zone in competition with Fargo, because in the state of North Dakota, they actually have an official state Renaissance Zone program. And downtown Fargo is its Renaissance Zone. My old town, Valley City, had one too. And so what they did is they called theirs the Renaissance Zone too, but there's actually no Minnesota Renaissance Zone. And they customized these incentives to it. So because it speaks the same language to the local region there. And that's where they came from. So they're doing it in competition with a tough competition where Fargo's winning.
So philosophically, it's the same as a TIF.
No. Well, philosophically,
it's not implementing the taxes back up. They're just dumb. It's this end game is the same, but here they're paying no taxes that until
we don't collect anything. Yeah. But it's just an abatement.
Yeah. Kind of similar with TIF. You're going to have to fit, the project would have to fit a certain bucket, right, in order to qualify. And then the money that you're getting from that TIF has to be spent on very, very specific improvements, whereas tax abatement has a lot less strings attached, and you don't have to fit within one of those buckets. So it provides us as a city a little bit more flexibility with that tool to be able to say this entire area can be covered under this. Not everything has to be housing, or not everything has to be redevelopment. We could see some new development. We could see some investment in existing buildings, kind of thing.
So it's like this old house that the state had years ago for 10 years.
Oh,
yeah. But yeah.
Yep.
So but it's 5 years, and it's for commercial.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So this would, they have two different categories. They've got the amount to a minimum investment per square foot for a rehab and a minimum investment per square foot for new construction. Obviously, you have to hit a higher bucket for new construction, but that, again, that makes it attainable for somebody who owns a building downtown currently to get some investment or get some break from investing in this area that otherwise would not be eligible for some sort of opportunity zone incentive.
And so we're thinking this might be like two or three zoning layers, and one of the layers we might actually call the Renaissance Zone layer, which would include this and some others, and we'd package our incentives to each layer. Mm-hmm. So we wouldn't have gazillions of layers, we'd have packages of similar incentives per layer.
So when we talk about that, that this Renaissance Zone is really a lot of the language and kind of policy that we've been looking at in Moorhead here. And I can get you guys, I realize I didn't bring copies of this, but we can get you copies of that if that's something you'd like to look through. The other piece we have under that fee incentive list is city land. So most of what the city owns in this area are parking lots. We would want to see, you know, in order to check that box and be able to take advantage of something like that, we would want to take into consideration parking. So we'd want to see some sort of, you know, underground parking package or additional parking infrastructure, whatever that means. But that's something that we think we could put on the table, because having a parking lot is, you know, it's a blank slate for the most part. There's not buildings that you're having to take down or anything like that. And to see some investment in those areas, we've got a couple of key ones that we've kind of talked about internally as some ideal development locations. Again, we just want to take into consideration that overall parking situation downtown, because we don't technically, there isn't any parking required by developments, because we value the density of commercial buildings and housing in this area, which largely plays to that walkability of this area of downtown. But in that case, we would want some sort of solution, because there are still there are parking needs, and the streets are not going to provide for all of that need. So we do want to see.
And with that, we'd probably, one of the caveats for the free land, the free city land in downtown area, would be that it's a substantial project. I mean, it would have to be a certain size, square footage, certain typology. You know, it would have to fall into a certain range of project types, and then boom, they hit that trigger and that incentive becomes available to them. Mm-hmm. I just want to say, just that whole package there, the whole point is to make this opportunity zone irresistible. So it just becomes a no-brainer. And if we even wanted to shorten this from an initial pilot of 5 years to just 2, we could do that. Just to see if it does, in fact, do what we want to do. And then we could do the second batch for 5 years. We could extend it for 5, and then do 5 after that, with modifications or whatever we want to do.
Okay. I'd say 5 years to start with.
Start with.
Because it'll take a year and a half for a plan.
Right, and another reason why we're doing this is we're trying to front-end all this stuff a little bit, because Aaron, the EDC, is working on the Opportunity Zone marketing plan right now, and with Golden Shovel. And so we've been, Sarah's been working hard to create this land availability map. We've designated a number of properties as heritage properties, trying to stay away from the word historic and preservation. But those would be properties that we'd want to be renovated. We'd have restrictions on them if they only renovate them. You know, like a couple of the old bank buildings downtown, like maybe Jake's Pizza because it's a landmark business, Frida's because it's a landmark business. The building is not a landmark, but we'd want to preserve the business as long as it's there. So we've marked a few of these properties as heritage for use and for, you know, architectural significance. And then we've gone through the entire zone and marked probably about 10 or 20 homes that we would like to also designate as heritage homes, where before they develop the land, there's a 60-day moratorium where the home would be offered for a dollar to whomever can move it to a lake or wherever they want, just to try to save the house before they demolish it. And you know, they would know that before, early on in the process, before they even decided on that property.
Sean,
go ahead.
Just because a lot of these are new ideas that are on here, and I don't have anything to compare them to. If I take those first 4 fee pieces, do you have any idea over the last couple of years of what we've collected for fees in this zone? Because I would imagine people would look at those and say, those are dollars that we'll probably lose. However, I needed to be able to say, well, that's a small price to pay for what we could get in development.
So correct.
Any ballpark of what we would probably...
An extremely small percentage of our permits are downtown.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah, I don't know what the exact figure is.
Because that would be a helpful kind of get a ballpark figure, because we're going to...
those would be fees we would have collected, but we probably will not as this program unfolds. But it'll be a lot easier to talk about the benefit for those projects for losing that. So
yeah, a cost-benefit analysis.
And the benefit of the whole downtown for just to make things upgraded.
As a part of the Loma Main Street program, we do track quarterly investment. So that at least gives us an idea of what's been invested over this past, over the past 3 to 4 years, if we want. And then from there, we can kind of extrapolate and actually pull those building permits as well.
So are we thinking that some of the businesses haven't done anything to their buildings because of the cost? And
that's not uncommon, right? That's a story that I think most downtowns would tell you, is just the sheer cost of investing in your building is expensive to upkeep a historic building. And so, but we want to see that investment, and we want to see that, that plays into the overall viability and economic vitality of your downtowns. And so to come forward with a very bold kind of incentive package for those property owners, where we say we recognize the value of the opportunity zone, but we also recognize that there's a lot of people that own buildings downtown that aren't ready to sell to somebody or some big development that can take advantage of that opportunity zone. And so we want to provide incentives for the community as well to take advantage of, in addition to making it irresistible for other larger developments that, again, drive more traffic downtown.
I would say that the lack of interest or the lack of monies to fix up the properties is a small part of this. The bigger part of it is that downtown is competing with our primary retail district, which is closer to the mall. And the city of Wilmer, like even some of the big cities in the metro area, cannot have two commercial districts. They just can't support two. And that's been what's happening in Wilmer. And I think underlying this is to reposition downtown, which we're going to kind of get to here, but to reposition downtown as more of a urban neighborhood and entertainment district, where there's services and restaurants. And if you look farther down here, we would open it up to bar licenses, because right now we restrict bar licenses to only places that serve food, liquor licenses. So we're talking about a total repositioning.
Foxhole? Didn't we change that a few years ago?
Foxhole doesn't serve food.
Foxhole is considered different because they're a brew pub.
Okay.
Because it used to be 60-40?
Still is.
Oh, food, 60 food, 40 alcohol.
So what we're trying to do is we're trying to actually send downtown into a new trajectory, where it was once the shopping retail kind of center, but we want to make it more of an urban neighborhood that is more entertainment oriented, to juxtapose the two so they can coexist.
John,
where are we? And that, I know it's not part of this, but it is in my brain. The downtown design standards. Mm-hmm. We've talked about revisiting those things and tuning those. For something to do this of this magnitude, I would love to see those standards revisited fairly quickly. Because I think you would have, if you had it very clearly delineated, a lot of nice new signs would pop out. And I think a lot of other things would. So where are we at?
So I think that's the beauty of, I feel like there's a lot of really big things kind of right on the cusp of beginning. So we've got the comprehensive plan that we just entered into contract with. We've got this opportunity zone work going on. And what we'd like to see with the Wilmer Main Street program over this next year is kind of using that body that we've built capacity in to kind of just support a lot of this work going on. And so right now the downtown master plan was actually adopted as a part of our current comprehensive plan, so we would be revisiting that whole thing. And from what I understand in conversations that I've had, that effort was greatly intended. There was a lot of effort that went into that. But then it kind of came to a stop because there are those investment pieces that you need to see that come after creating that plan. And I think that we have this intention with the comprehensive plan to have kind of a five-year, I don't know what you want to call it, five-year plan, right? Of like, here's very tangible things of what we're moving forward with and how we're investing in these areas.
Right.
And one of those focuses would be downtown of, you know, here we were working on the lights and we need to think about signage comprehensively and we need to think about all of these components of downtown. And so by pivoting and saying we want to see this kind of really support this entertainment district, which I think, you know, we've got a lot of restaurants, we've got coffee shops in the Barn Theater and the Brew Pub, we've got all sorts of these things that are already kind of leading us in that direction, that I think to really incentivize and encourage more of that.
With a massive population.
Yep.
But on the same thing what you're saying, before you are going to incentivize people to invest and upgrade their properties, there has to be a standard.
Yep.
So I can think of two things right off the top of my head when we come to signage.
Yep.
The bakery sign.
Yep.
And the Art Wars.
Yep. So there are a couple, actually right in the next section that we're going to talk about.
And then how is that not subjective? And then the second thing would be window display.
Mm-hmm.
So when you've got boxes and carpets up against just looking like a garage sale,
yep.
How is that not subjective of what we think is a standard of what a storefront should look like?
Mm-hmm.
And then how do you enforce that?
Well, I mean, there's cities that have a historic district. And my fear is when you put on here a local heritage designation, that automatically does actually give you some parameters, I think. I look at Jake's remodel and I say, they have preserved a very specific type of glazed brick architecture that was when it was the Puritan Bakery. I mean, it is a preservation piece. But it is being done, and it keeps that. I don't think I would want to see, and I think I could have it with this, and I don't want this. I don't want to see that next to a large steel glass structure that does not conform to what a historic downtown. I would think I'm seeing brick facades, and I'm seeing this kind of thing. It harkens to downtown Litchfield. It goes to downtown Red Wing, places that have these historic districts usually have rules. You can't put up a neon sign. You can't, it has to conform to some sort of thing. We don't have those, and there's been groups that have tried to put those together and have not been successful, and I've been on some of those groups.
Yep.
My fear, if we open this up, I don't want to see that, some of those types of things, because it's not really, and that's just me personally, that's not what the downtown of Willmar is, was, or now should be.
Sure. Chairman. I agree that you can either take that path or you can open it up.
Yep.
And there are, like, in northeast Minneapolis, just across the river from downtown, is an area they call Nihi. I don't know if you know Nye's Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And they just tore that down, put up a new building. They have architectural standards, but they also allow glass buildings. And it creates a pretty interesting mosaic of different architecture all in that same area. So it makes it interesting. It doesn't become this kind of Disneyland harking back to the past. It's actually a living, diverse community that has all different styles and periods of architecture in the same area. So, I mean, there are harmonious, you know, ways of doing it. My only concern is if you just make it historic, a lot of the new buildings that go up that are following these architectural standards often look fake, or, you know, not very well done, you know, or they just do the basic, you know, brick columns, some, you know, white precast concrete trimming around the edges, and they're not inspirational, they're just, you know, but it's not my call, but we can go either way.
And don't think I have to. You have to create a facade, but it need you. And you can call it interesting, but if I have got And we go, because I went out with several folks from the Minnesota Historical Society who came out here to talk about historic districts. Mm-hmm. And we have down this street, from whether it's the Tallman Building on the yellow brick corner, you go with the brickwork that's at the Oddfellows, you can go right down, and we have tremendous historical, and it spans, those span several decades as you go down that. Not opposed, I mean, look at what was done with the Foxhole. That is in a historic area, and it was done tastefully, and still it conforms to what it is. Sure. So, I mean, I think you can still do it. I don't think that that building looks fake or anything, but you should have some type of standard, because, yeah. I mean, just because you can say, well, we've got a lot of incentives, what I don't want, and I've heard a former person, not on the current council, but in the past, say the best thing would be to destroy half a block down here and put in a big box store. I don't think is what you're talking about.
No, not at all.
We
do want to open it up, and we want people to have, we want to open it up to creativity and have developers bring in proposals and things that we may not necessarily think of if we set up restrictions. So there's this kind of like tug of war where we want to really try to make this an open canvas, but we can also do restrictive covenants. So,
and I say don't go overboard on them, but I mean, maybe check out some of the other examples where they tried to keep a feel, if you will.
Well, I think you already did that with the Quick Trip, because it had to have some type of arches, and it couldn't just be a brick auto zone.
Yep. Right. We do still have those design standards where those design standards were adopted as part of the zoning ordinance. So there are some of those pieces built in. Now, we don't have a historic preservation commission. We don't have a designated heritage zone.
What we've done is we've selected particular buildings.
Right.
And there's actually not that many.
And, you know, we can certainly put feelers out there if there is. I know in the past we haven't had an appetite for that, which is why I still have, you know, working documents that have been put together that have never been passed in some of my files. We could consider some sort of local historic designation, you know, where the example I pulled was from Minneapolis, but I know there's multiple others. You know, if a property is associated with some significant event, I think of like the Wilmer 8 or some, you know, broad cultural, political, or economic or social history. It's associated with a significant person or contains, a distinctive element of the city or something like that. You know, it allows for that local designation to say this is an important piece for Wilmer, whatever that might be. Maybe it doesn't fit the state standards or the national standards to be on the historic registry. We have a couple of those, but not too many. And maybe that's part of how we go through some of this as well when we talk about that heritage preservation piece and some of those standards around what we want to see done with those buildings, because I think there's a really interesting story in Wilmer of, you know, the bypass coming through, and there's so many buildings that you can point and say that's where the Carnegie Library used to be and that's where that used to be, and we don't have that anymore. And I think that there is an important, you know, there's a lot of change that has happened over the past 20 years in Wilmer, but that change doesn't mean that we have to completely erase what has been either. And I think that there's some really interesting work and really interesting kind of promotion of that, like, new history, if you will, and some organizations out there that are really promoting a lot of that reuse of historic buildings, while we're also taking into consideration what used to be and what new looks like next to that.
We can take what we have and craft those standards.
I will just tell you, I will appreciate that. I actually received a grant to do a downtown Wilmer transitional history. Mm-hmm. We got money from the Historical Society, and we did research many of these buildings. Mm-hmm. And we did talk about the history of change. And I understand and accept change. But change just for the sake of getting investment downtown that might not be strategic or long-term, I don't chase those dollars. We want to have a real impactful and intentional kind of a design downtown, I think. And if I'm in the minority, I will acquiesce very quickly. But I think the design is usually you wanted to have some kind of continuity downtown. And so I would say you can get all kinds of wonderful information from Jill Wanutka at the Historical Society. Mm-hmm. That all of these buildings have been done. Because we even had the state out here, and they went building by building and gave you a whole layout of each one. And you may have identified a handful. I'm telling you, they all have.
Have you seen it? Or do you,
Our goal would not be project goal. It would be scope. So, like, for instance, our goal would probably be, like, 1,000 units in the first 5 years in downtown in the Opportunity Zone.
1,000 units of what?
Apartments, condominiums, co-ops, you know, high density, retail down below. You know, something that really creates an urban.
I'm missing something. Yeah. Where would this go without tearing down a building? I mean, we don't have that many open lots.
That's why we designated a number of them as heritage. But there's really not that many when you look at it. It's the International Oddfellows building. You have the old insurance building across the street. You've got the bank building that was shot at with the robbers. You've got the theater. And you start going through it, and you start having maybe a dozen to two dozen buildings. And then everything else is not that historically significant.
So and you are talking about tearing something down
absolutely.
And building new. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. What do we have for apartments, not for units now?
Downtown?
87, something like that, right around that area.
Okay, just a little less than 100.
Yeah. They're one-bedroom and studios.
And they're not.
A lot of them are, yeah. And that does include, there are a couple like fringe houses that still exist in what's downtown, so there's a couple single-family homes in there as well, but the majority of them are studios.
And so we're talking about a population that would live and support the downtown economy, essentially.
Because we've talked about this before, the rent of those is probably not very high, and they're probably not very, they're not the higher-end type of a place, I think you would, safe to say. And we're talking about transitioning and having probably a range of different amenities of these apartments.
Right. Absolutely.
So, do you mind if I pick up, because we're kind of running out of time?
Sure thing.
So we've kind of touched on some of these other things that are later on the list, like the heritage and the maximally open zoning versus architectural standards, which is the overlay district zoning. So I'm not going to touch on that now since we've kind of discussed similar things. But we also are talking about doing some packages where we might have matching grants for facades. It might be $10,000, and we do a lottery sort of a thing where people would put their $10,000 in the bank, fill out an application, show proof of their deposit, and then we'd have a lottery, and voila, they have a matching $10,000 grant, and it gets forgiven like $2,000 a year for 5 years. As long as they own the building for 5 years, that grant is forgiven at the end of the term, something like that. So that's just the concept. It's done in a lot of places. The other is free business development counseling, which I think Main Street has done some of already. But this would be another perk based on hitting some threshold. Student loan forgiveness incentive. That's done in some towns to encourage people that graduate from the local colleges to stay. If they buy one of the units that is in the Opportunity Zone, they might get a $10,000 applied to their student loans, something like that. These are just ideas.
Which student loans then? If they go here to the 2 year, or they go off in the 4 year? Then?
We don't know. Maybe could be either one.
I would say
this one.
If you go here,
right? But. Yep. Again, these are all just raw kind of ideas. Sarah's already mentioned, you know, we're after primarily, you know, housing, mixed income, mixed owner rental. That would create the mass, and then with retail down below, that actually is kind of a self-supporting, becomes a self-supporting downtown, very urban neighborhood, entertainment district neighborhood. We're talking about allowing bar licenses in the opportunity zone, removing weekend and holiday parking restrictions, so that when people come downtown on the weekends, they can park wherever they want to. Yeah.
Don't they do that now?
Yeah. Are they, the parking's not
parking
enforced on the
enforced
weekends?
Monday through Saturday. And on holidays.
And on New Year's Day.
Right. So we'd want to remove that.
When did we switch to Saturdays? Okay.
I know.
Oh.
So that kind of, and then so that kind of covers it in a nutshell. Sarah, do you mind if I take your map for 1 second?
Yep.
I was gonna want to close it, but these red ones are the buildings that we figured are of heritage quality. City Hall is, where is City Hall? Here, right here. Yep. So as you can see, there's the
auditorium.
These ones here are no tear down. So like the hospital, the auditorium, and other properties. The red ones are heritage. So these are ones that you'd have to renovate. And everything in between is can be torn down. One of them is Frida's. it's a heritage use.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole point of all this is it's just ideas. We just wanted to get a feeling for your tolerance level for some of these things. And whether it's worthwhile for us to go to the next step and try to develop some of the ordinances and the details that we can then bring back to you and maybe in packages. We wouldn't bring them to council yet. We'd bring them, because it's going to be a lot of work to develop these, but we'd bring maybe packages of five or something. Excuse me. And then get approval for one, all, or whatever. Put them in the file, bring back the next batch. And so forth, and modify them per your comments, and then ultimately bring the whole thing to council as a package of incentives.
Julie?
Okay, so how long has Moorhead had their Renaissance Zone?
September of 2018.
Ah, and what have they seen?
We don't know.
Okay.
And that's the whole point of this. It is a pilot program. We don't know what we're going to see. So that's why we want to make it for a brief period of time. That's why we want to make it to a certain area of town. We don't want this to be across town all over the place. But you know what? If this is successful and it does take off and it reaches its critical mass of what we wanted, we could then take that and supplant it and put it somewhere else. Also, if the IRS's or the federal opportunity zone disappears, ours remains. So this is a layer on top of that. So they can get not only the capital gains incentive, they could also get all of these. So we're literally combining a lot of different incentives that, I mean, altogether, this is a significant amount of money.
We hope.
I mean, in the sense.
To incentives, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I applaud thinking out of the box, and I've got a lot to digest here, so I think it's great. And I want to also comment now, as I'm looking at your map, if you go from basically 5th to 2nd, and from Pacific to Becker, which is just right here,
okay,
where all those red buildings are,
yeah,
that's where all of my comments are being I'm bringing up. The rest of that, put up a big glass skyscraper as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
But I'm thinking, for what all of my comments, let me just tell you, are designated to this small area right
here.
Yeah,
I get you.
Absolutely.
I get you.
So I mean, there
so
could
if
be...
So if we did have an architectural standards, we might have a layer that is concentrated on a particular part.
That I would think would make sense, because that's a very large area.
Right. Yep. These pink ones, by the way, are the heritage houses, correct?
Yep.
Yep. So these are the ones we'd want to give a 60-day
awesome
moratorium on.
Yeah.
And some of the thought on those too is that, you know, that area just east of downtown that is residential is more of that historic residential where the homes were a lot larger than you might see now. And there has been some different examples of cities kind of opening up, and I think it's probably, I think it's the last item on the list, number 17.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, kind of 16 and 17, but really just, again, pushing and promoting this idea that by opening up some of our zoning standards, we would want to really encourage creativity of, you know, neighborhood shops, or, you know, maybe we consider a neighborhood office on a corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not right in the middle of everything, but maybe there's a corner on Trot Avenue,
mm-hmm.
you know, where there is a little bit higher traffic already, and maybe a light commercial use wouldn't be the most detrimental thing.
No longer it's not just Sarah and mine and our ideas. It's a lot of people locally, mm-hmm. statewide, nationally coming in here with lots of ideas. We don't have to improve them.
Yep. I would think you would have some input on my concern for some of that area there. If we're going to put in more housing units, is the parking issue and people parking on the street and businesses then not having parking available.
Right.
That's always the issue with downtown. But the apartments upstairs, having more, that has been tough.
The standard model now is parking underneath. Yeah, you've seen them all over the place, especially in the metro area. The parking is underneath.
Well, they've been talking about putting a parking ramp in the downtown area for actually decades and decades. And it's never happened. Not that this might not be the incentive that actually makes some of that actually happen, but I mean, I've dusted off. I've seen a lot of those at the Historical Society, of all these plans for building a parking ramp kind of concept.
Almost always between the hospital and the library. Yeah. I mean, that's been the key area.
Brian? If you're doing it for convenience, you can't afford it. If you're doing it because it's an inconvenience, you're going to pay a lot per stall. I mean, I've looked at parking ramps for 30 years. Everybody says, yes, we need a parking ramp. And then you go like, well, it's going to cost you $100,000 a car. It just goes away. It just goes away. It, let them fight for the space on the street. So it's just an economics thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate, mm-hmm. but it is.
Well, I've heard from architects all the time, and they say, I mean, it's the concept of, you're really, if you were in a parking lot and parking way in the back of the lot, that if you're two blocks off of that business, it's probably the same walk, but people want to be able to have the sight line of where they're going. I frequent downtown a lot, and I never can park in front of where I'm going.
Right.
It's just how it is. And so you go into those lots, and a two-block walk might seem forever because you can't see where you're going to your destination. But, I mean, I know there's parking issues, and if I want to park in front of that place that I want to go to, I don't get to do that very often, but
we would probably have a one-on-one parking requirement with the developments. So,
yeah.
I mean, I, for the last 12 years at HUD, you know, I've had 50 units to 1,500 units, and every single one of the projects has had on-site in interior parking.
Yeah.
So, that's very common.
That's government, though.
Well, and I'm I was just going to get into that. Is the incentive? The incentive.
You're going to show there's a. In Nolan, there's a 35-unit apartment complex just constructed, opened up a year ago, underground parking.
Right. It's the standard model.
In private New Ulm, half a block from the downtown on the main drag, and underground heated parking,
right.
And it's applicable to seniors, you know, over 55.
Yeah. We have that at the co-op and at the Regency.
With rents of $850 to $1,000 kind of a thing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, you build it, they will come.
Right.
You give them a parking, they'll come faster.
Right.
There was a plan out by Viking Motel or Century 21 there. Businesses were going to build a business office and have underground parking.
Yep.
It was just too expensive. That was 15 years ago. It never happened.
So what we're looking for is a motion to just give us permission to continue on the path and take your comments and see if we can come up with this cost-benefit thing, maybe take a stab at some detailed architectural standards for particular part of this opportunity zone, and also some of your other concerns with parking and et cetera. And then come back and visit with you again.
That's what I was just going to ask, is what you want. Oh, so you got a skeleton here. You want permission to put some bone muscles on it.
Correct.
Because, I mean, a lot of these, I think you got to have some more information. The one about student loans is the one that I've had. I've got a little icy feel on that one initially. But, I mean, the rest of them I'm very open to. There needs to be some more on that, of what these things are.
Because I look at that, like, with the people going into education and having some kind of forgiveness stuff, and it's like, okay, I don't get how this is going to work, but okay.
We didn't hold off any punches. We threw it all out there. Yeah. So,
yeah. So I could see an attorney saying, I'm going to move my law firm there, but thanks for paying for my law school. I appreciate that. I don't know how far you want to go, so maybe corralling that in a little bit. But I would make a motion to allow the Opportunity Zone to continue its development.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Say aye. Those opposed? You can continue.
All right, we'll be back with more. Thank you very much.
Anything else, then?
Nope. Any updates? We are going to meet with Mid-Minnesota this week. They have a kickoff meeting on the comp plan. So we're really excited about that. I guess they're as excited as we are. They've already started some data mining and some digging around to come up with some of these maps and tables and diagrams that we've initially. We're going to try to do like 20, 25 of them just to get the thing rolling. And then we will be bringing those things to you too for creative brainstorming and input. And so we appreciate your open-mindedness and willingness to put your time on this.
No problem. Sean, any other business?
Not for me.
Julie?
Just want to say that the holidays thing I thought was huge success. Mm-hmm. Huge success. And the weather, of course, helped.
Sounds like not being way below zero.
Oh, yeah.
Snowing.
Yeah. But, the lines in the auditorium for all of the bouncy house things, and the cookies were great, and the new craft thing at the, 330 building, is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Fabulous, the turkey bowling, and I thought the parade was good, and the movie was, I stayed for the movie. That was
so they use Jennios for the turkey balls?
Yep.
Yep.
The only
James Miller thing, he's all about that turkey bowling.
Because it's cool. The one comment that I'll make, and it's just like, you just want to protect them from themselves, but Spurs. It's like, this is a huge downtown event, okay? You are going to have thousands of people. Have enough food. Have enough help. Have your pop machines working. I was like, oh, you just want to help them. Mm-hmm.
Well, you just think a lot of the businesses.
And they
downtown,
have music in there.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the businesses downtown too. You know, you're going to have that. Can you just like have walking taco? Could you have samosas to go out there? I mean, all of us. I wish we had more buy-in from some of our local businesses to really be part of that, because there is a captive audience that are all standing around.
And I figured they didn't have food trucks because they wanted people to go to the downtown businesses.
Spurs didn't realize how big it gets. That could be.
Because, I mean, I'm not going to call it out, but Goodness seems to understand what's going on.
But you know what?
And so they have, the line is going all the time.
Years ago, when we first opened, when I think Beverly was in charge.
Yeah.
And she's the one who said, you guys should do Chicago Dogs. And now we're on the poster every year. So we know we're, like, ready for it. We have everybody working and... we did run out of dogs because we sold more this year than we usually do.
you take advantage of the fact that there are thousands of people downtown. Let's get them in the door.
But we know, but Spurs is new. They don't.
Weren't they here last year?
But see, I mean, it's not just, I wouldn't just call them out. It's the whole of downtown. A lot of these businesses, it's like, it's huge. You know, if you want to bring a bunch of people in to check out your place that might not otherwise do it, you're missing an opportunity here.
Sometimes they don't have the money for the inventory.
I get that. Yeah, that's true, too. But, I mean, if there could be any kind of a outreach to say, you know what, anything we can do to kind of help, that would be great.
Probably shouldn't have been on the website.
Do you have anything else, Vicki?
No.
No? Move to adjourn?
So move.
We're adjourned.